That's interesting. What we, how much time do we have now? I have to ask. How much time do we have for discussion? Can we devote 10 minutes for discussion at least? More? Okay. So we are not in a hurry in going to. All right. So I should have known that. I'm sorry. It's all my fault. So we have a very interesting session, very global. We raised the global issue of both socialist realism and by exchange, in a way, mutual exchange between Czechoslovakia and China, how the socialist realism taught the Chinese realism, but how the Chinese artists revitalized their language. In a way, they took the modernism. This was like Paul Gauguin visiting Tahiti. It was, they revitalized their modernist language. But, and then I'm introducing this modern aspect because what you were discussing, that was the another form of exchange, or perhaps it was more one-sided, that socially, you called it architectural internationalism, but can I use the term socialist modernism? Okay, we'll discuss that later. was of exported, course, it was not, exported from Berlin to North Korea, and so that's okay. I just summarize what we've been talking about. So I'm opening the field for discussion. Yes.
Hi, thank you very much for both your talks. That's really fascinating. And Emma, I'd like to speak to you afterwards, just because I've been doing some research in that area a little bit for the National Gallery, so I'd be really interested to hear more. I actually had a question for you instead, which is kind of a bit random, but I've been really interested about the, the Mansudae Overseas Projects, which is the North Korean kind of contemporary socialist realism building projects, and they build art. They've got the art studio, and they've also got the architectural studio, and they're building particularly in countries in Africa, and it's really interesting. I don't know whether you'd kind of thought about that. I was really struck by, you know, the GDR building these kind of modernist projects in North Korea, and now North Korea going and building socialist realist buildings in Africa, and this kind of strange connection. I don't know whether there is a direct connection, but it's a really weird link.
Oh, wow. Sounds awesome.
Yeah, they're a major money spinner for the North Korean government.
This Mansudae,
Mansudae. That's it.
I just write it down. It had not been very easy to find really kind of precise, like a lot of information. I mean, yes, there is, I think, a lot of research starting, I mean, specifically by Yang Sung Hong, which I really appreciate a lot. I have not come across this kind of further exchange and the North Koreans in which countries in the continent?
Across but Africa, Algeria. Angola, they've done these huge like socialist realist sculptures as well.
54 countries, it's Nigeria, right. And Angola.
Well, okay, there's a Wikipedia page I looked up, and it's got all of them listed. And
excellent.
It's about 20 different countries.
I'm happy to look this up.
Yeah, Benin, you know, West Africa, East Africa, North Africa, all over.
Thank you. That's very compelling. Would like to hear more about this. Thank you.
This one's also
there's
one in Ethiopia.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was just okay. Jerome, you wanted to say something? Okay.
Yes, it's true. In East Germany, you have a lot of projects. I think it's later in the 60s, 70s. And your project I find really original because it's pretty early in the chronology. And the fact what you told that there are practically no publicity in the GDR, I find it very interesting and very why no publicity, and it's a kind of opening to the rest of the world, but at the same time, for the East German population, what does it mean? It's nobody knew about that. And I have a question. You mentioned at a moment the question of the folk art, Chinese folk art, and what was understood by folk art, and what does it mean? Chinese folk art? Was it applied art, images?
It would be mainly paper cuts or those really peasantry prints, like woodcut prints, which would the peasantry do themselves for the New Year's Eve, or what else? Folk art. Maybe even the costumes. It's the first exhibitions which were, because it was also vice versa. I here presented only the one direction, but the art which was imported to Czechoslovakia mainly in the first 5 years of the 1950s was as a folk art, and it was even costumes, those paper cuts, not the revolutionary woodcuts, but maybe I have no idea now what was there in these exhibitions, but it was more always than traditional art rather than the opposite, which was imported to China, which was realist art, or in some cases in 1955, real Sorella, like socialist realism. So I'm not really sure if I answered the question, but sorry, I'm not now aware of the proper folk art.
Do you have the microphone? No. All right. In the meantime, can I ask whether Łukasz Stanek, who published recently a book on the importance of socialist architects in building in Ghana and in Africa and all over the world. Did he actually refer to North Korean project, to Ham Hung?
I know about the book, and I know, mm-hmm. I look at research, I know that he's focusing a lot on Ghana, also mm-hmm. in his previous research, is very, very fascinating. And as far as I know, I mean, I haven't read the book yet.
Oh, right, yes.
So it's maybe someone...
Yes, we can't read all the books, especially those which have been just published. So.
Yeah, but I think he's really focusing, I mean, might be in the audience, people much better know about this, on building projects in the continent, like in Ghana, I hope. There is also like an East German architecture project in Ghana, in Tema. Tema was kind of the administrative center of Ghana, and this is not research. It just found by coincidence, so maybe just to comment very briefly, when I did the research in the archive of United Nations in Geneva, and the librarian brought me all these kind of amazing magazines and journals, like a Deutsche Architektur, that was constitutive to document like the architectural project, a state crafting projects for this young state. Nothing, not one thing on this massive, massive, massive kind of urban planning project. Mm-hmm. And I think there is something about this. And I think it has to do with Moscow.
Is it because it is North Korea?
I think because Moscow embarked mm-hmm. pretty immediately on Pyongyang. And mm-hmm. I think there was already this kind of desire of the East Germans to be independent, let's say, to be like, we are an own state. There was this permanent inferior complex of being a product from the kind of Cold War, from the Second World War thing. And I have a bit the impression, so I haven't consulted the Stasi files yet. I did this for the contribution in the Oxford Handbook. It's totally different. I looked, studied deeply Stasi files, and I found this really compelling that you can find there. So this might be, maybe we find something there on this. Right. But I find this also really very compelling from a contemporary kind of perspective, why it's been silenced also.
Okay, thank you. A question to Doreen. Could you please elaborate a little bit more on the concept of chronopolitics, or on the very meaning of the concept, as well as on how you applied it or still intend to apply it to the case you were talking about?
No, absolutely. No, I mean, this is a concept that I borrow from Elizabeth Freeman, and it's a book, Time's Bind or something, that's been quite important in the field of contemporary art, and specifically also like queer understandings of temporalities. And it's kind of a concept that makes a very clear kind of statement against the chrononormative order. Chrononormative orders like deadlines, delivering chronology, like from A to B in one, And they, Elizabeth Freeman would situate this kind of in a certain affective evocation when a deep past, let's say, it's not like a haunted figure, but I mean, something becomes pertinent in the present moment that disrupts, I mean, linearity of time. So this is the reason why I used this kind of stratification. So I did explicitly not follow a chronological order of the documents, but also let jump in moments from a contemporary kind of observations, 2008 or 2015. And, you know, it's an opening of a fabric woven from various temporalities, if this makes sense. I mean, you know, the affective moment, maybe you could say, for me, has to do with the political condition in the present. So this is also like one reason I embarking on these projects, because it's really tiring to see what's happening. So I can go in further detail, but I think we can, I mean, you know what I'm talking about, of like the right-wing parties claiming these kind of stories, and I'm just against this renationalization. That's the reason I insist on internationalism. So I would agree it's a socialist modernity, but it is also an internationalism, because it's built in various kind of paradigms, understandings. Konrad Püschel studied closely architectural kind of formulations in North Korea. He built work together. And there, at the same time, a lot of problems regarding race and gender in this Hamhung project, which Samyung, the historian I quoted now a couple of times, is also referring to. So there is still a lot of work to be done.
And it is internationalism, not transnationalism.
I would like to get it a bit, I mean, for the sake maybe of the argument, to have it still resonating. Mm-hmm.
Emphasis on internationalism rather than kind of more nomadic.
No, it's state. I mean, the state plays a role there. It's a protocol that plays a role. So I think we cannot just claim, oh, this grassroots. No, it's a protocoled macro-political thing that is kind of mixed with micropolitics on the social kind of sphere. So for that reason, also, maybe we have to decolonize internationalism. It would be the next project. I mean, we are working on this already.
Maybe just to follow up on what Desiree, what you just said about the investigation that Püschel made in North Korea, from an architect perspective, which I am, I would like to ask you to expand a little bit on what he observed and how he, because actually I saw the exhibition Bauhaus Imaginista at the Haus der Kultur und der Welt in Berlin a few months ago. And there is an image of the outreach of the Bauhaus all over the world in terms of how the exhibition is structured. And somehow the Bauhaus has always been actually taking, or other than giving, in a sense of this humanitarianism, in a sense of this alter modernity, or like modernity that has been adaptive to the condition of the place, studying the place first, like the experience of the IMS in India, or like other examples of this sort. So what it took in terms of technology of construction, can you expand on this? Or like, or also how the building site was carried on, like in this very technical way, what it did, what it took, and he did it, brought it back to European constructions?
This is a large question that would need like even another lecture, but that you should have a look into the writings of Marion von Osten, who is really also very precise in situating the Bauhaus moment in an internationalist kind of formation with workers group organizations in Germany and in Moscow. So she makes a very on the Bauhaus Imaginista website, where she is really arguing against this narrative of Bauhaus as this enlightened, democratic, liberal kind of idea. She connects it politically to the Moscow workers' movement kind of narrative. In case of Konrad Püschel, it's also complex. It's difficult to just answer this in one thing. He came back. He had really problems to also come back only through a friend and connections from earlier kind of moments. He was able to come back to Weimar. So he lived in Weimar and then was a teacher and at some point a professor at the Bauhaus University for architecture and the rural architecture. So the whole kind of urban planning, I mean, I did not see this reappearing in his continuous practice, where other people that were really, I mean, in the party line. So Konrad Püschel was also a bit like not party line conformed totally, but also not a total dissident. And this, I think, is important. But the Oxford, the communist visual cultures, really tries a strong argument to get out of the binarism, which I think we all agree. But you know what? The what does it look like? Vocabularies, etc. I couldn't answer your question really precisely, but I can point you maybe to for things afterwards.
Actually, I have a question for Emma with regards to Czech art presentations in China in the 50s. Do you firstly have any statistics with regards to the number of viewers in China seeing those exhibitions? And, well, I'm not going to assume they were relatively free to walk around and interpret it, but is there any impact information reports in Czech archives? And second of all, I wanted to ask about the political influences, because this is, you know, this is just before the Cultural Revolution was take place, I think 6 years afterwards or 5 years afterwards. You know, Madame Mao, what was her influence, and was there any notes on that in Czech archives?
So usually in the archives you could find exact numbers of the visitors, because the cultural attachés were sending the letters every so often, and those expositions were at the big expo constructions, where usually art site and industrial site were connected. So usually it is a larger number going to see the industrial expositions, where were the tractors, the Zetor, and all the technical newly sent from Czech Republic. But also, I think the Czechoslovak expositions were after the Russian ones, or maybe, I'm not sure if Romanians one were also really famous, but after the Soviet ones were probably the second most famous, because Czechoslovakia had really leading role among the other befriended countries with China. And what happened, if there was any impact on it, which they really brought, I think it was mainly because Czechoslovak artists weren't really educating the new artists, as we could see, because the oil painting in the big social realism format was much later, and it was mainly Soviet artists coming to China, and the Czech artists had rather more like traveling and buying artifacts, bringing them back to Czech Republic, which was important base for our collection. But others, I think the Czech literature was a big deal there, that because of those translations, they always said how many books will be translated from Czech literature. So, for example, Fučík was one of the big heroes, which is now even in China surviving, because it's similar to this Chinese soldier, which I completely forget the name. He's still surviving in the paintings from the socialist realism until today. He's still the hero. So the ambivalence with Fučík was one of the surviving moments. And otherwise, I'm not really sure now. Other else.
So I cannot see any more questions. So I think that we are going to close our afternoon session, and close the day at the same time. Thank you very much. We problematized loads of issues. We expanded the geography of socialist realism. We also built some bridges between socialist realism and architectural internationalism. I know that they are very hesitant bridges. Perhaps we will continue on that topic later. So I just wanted to say thank you to all our speakers in the afternoon session. And we will continue tomorrow from 9:30 in the morning, aren't we?
Yes.
So, what is the program? What
do you know
the
program? Bauhaus
factory in Beijing. We are not.
Where now all the there's artists, but it's like proper Bauhaus.
All right. Okay.
They didn't change anything.
So thank you
for
so
the
much.
Chinese.
Return tomorrow at 9:30.
Do return. And they have the most expensive galleries now inside of this Bauhaus factory.
Oh, yeah.